Wow, that's a lot of people. Wow, thank you, Arthur. There was a good reason why we didn't work out a spot. We were just too far apart, and I really believe that you should have a sponsor that you can see and get your hands on a regular basis at that time. Not to give you guys an explanation. Hey, everybody, I'm Gene Russell. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. My sobriety date's October 21st, 2006. Judging by that sobriety countdown, the committee selected a newcomer to come be your speaker tonight. It's true what they said. I've recently moved and left the United States and relocated to Florida. Just a few months ago, and I want to thank Arthur and Helen especially, and Cynthia, and everybody that was so kind in having me come out to celebrate the 76th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous in Atlanta, Georgia. The levity of being asked to be here has not fallen short on me. This is an important and huge anniversary, because I don't know how some of you look at this, but if those men that, when Avery read what she read about the history of AA in Atlanta, I'm in my mind, I'm listening, I'm getting goosebumps. And if those men and women haven't done those things, I'm dead. And I'm looking at a bunch of beautiful dead people here tonight. And I'm home. My family moved me here, and we're going to get into the story and all of that. And I've only been sober 10 years. And I saw you guys come up with the 1 week thing, and I want to be the first or second or third to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. And whether you know it or not, you've already tapped into a power much greater than yourself. Allow yourself to be loved. Allow yourself to take in this work. They're going to be turned on to you. Get you a home group and make a host of friends. It's real easy around here. This is the best deal out there. And man, I tell you what, to be part of such a powerful movement in this country when we're losing them by the thousands out in the street right now, it's truly indeed an honor to be part of this. And I miss you guys. And I know some of you, you guys have been sober since there was only one A. Rusty's in the room. Yeah, Rusty's not getting off the hook tonight.
We'll get to him in a minute.
Avery, there's a couple of points. I'm only going to keep you for about 2 or 3 hours and we'll get out of here. I've been charged with telling you what I used to be like, what happened to me, and what I'm like today as a result of living within this design for living the 12 steps have given us. And I hope if you're new or if you're not new, if you get something out of this, there's a couple of real, real important points I want you to walk out of here with tonight. That one is that this thing works. Absolutely. You cannot fail. That's the only thing Alcoholics Anonymous cannot do is fail. It can't fail if you do it. And you understand this. When we walk out of here, I don't care what you say in the parking lot or at the coffee shops after this thing. My Gene Russell guy, he's going to tell you, he believes that God is real. Because I didn't for a long time. Now, my idea of God might differ from your idea of God, and I'm not into that debate, but I know something's happening. If you look at my life, if I look at your life, if I look at all these dead people in here dressed like this in Atlanta, Georgia, in the middle of all the bars, and we're all sober, looking good, having a good time, actually eating, imagine that. God is real. Something's happening, because I am uncomfortable sober by nature. I don't like that condition. It makes me feel awkward, self-conscious. It's not who I am. And I'm a big, big fan of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I told you my sobriety date. Avery spoke about that revolving door. Did y'all catch that? I'm a revolving door guy. For a lot of reasons. We're going to get into some of that. But my first meeting was 15 years prior to my sobriety date. And that's why I'm a big fan of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a huge fan of the work that goes into becoming a sober alcoholic. And I, man, this last 10 years of my life, and I'd like to talk more about this last 10 years of sobriety, because that, for me, is where the hope is. It wasn't just some big rocket ride. Gene got sober and, woo, rags to riches. It's rags to cleaner rags. I'm not a wealthy man. But but it's early yet, but I hadn't been arrested in 10 years neither. That's a big deal. And I've been thinking a lot about this talk, because Alcoholics Anonymous afforded me, as once I got into, say, I'm a product, I need to let you know, I'm a product of NABA, the Biscayne Room, over there in 8111, and these clubhouses, and these little church meetings, and the parking lots of these places. I got sober in the parking lots with men like Rusty Jones, that loved me enough to tell me the truth when I didn't want to hear it. And I want to commend all of you crusty old-timers, I've been doing it for the years y'all been doing it, to take time out of your life to set these meetings up, build these committees, cook this food, set these chairs up, make sure Nimrods like me show up at places like this. Thank you. You may never have any idea the service you provide for people like me. If I come up here and stand and chat with you guys for a few minutes, of course it hasn't fallen short on me. This is one of the biggest honors of my life, to be in my hometown in beautiful Atlanta, Georgia, to talk about some experience, strength, and hope tonight. And I want us to walk out of here knowing that the gift that God's given us, this gift of sobriety, is not to be used lightly. Much has been given, much is expected. What an honor to be sober tonight. And we have to do something with that sobriety. And that was the first charge my sponsor gave me, Danny. Yeah, baby. Danny's been with me all these 10 years. Met him over at NABA, and after I found my way back into Alcoholics Anonymous. We'll get to all that, but that's the only condition he ever put on sponsoring me, because he had seen me flounder around. He said, I'll sponsor you on one condition. When the time comes, you work with others. Not work on others. I know that's what you like to do, but work with others. I got a great sponsor. He's one of my dearest friends, and he's just a wonderful guy. And he would be here tonight, except he wasn't paying $25 to hear me talk. He already does that three times. Baby, I love you, but $25 is steep. Maybe we'll see him after. But this is a great cause. This is a great tradition, and it should continue, because guys like us to get to come in here and welcome to our new people, take that book and understand that you've got the key to everything right there in that. You don't even got to read the whole thing. You don't read about that much of it, you know, because that's where the work is. But growing up here afford you a lot of opportunity to do the wrong thing. And when my folks moved here from Texas, where I'm from, yeah, Texas is in the house. Anytime anybody, one person, you say Texas and a Texan, I've been all over the country, other countries, man. There's a Texan. I was in Grand Prairie, Alberta, Canada, and I said, I'm from Texas. And somebody's like, hey. Dallas, that's not Texas. It's not. It's Atlanta South. No, Dallas is great. But I like you guys, started drinking in my mid-teens, whatever. I discovered liquor around 14, and I like to hook up with what Bill Wilson wrote in his story. He discovered liquor, and I like that word, discovered. You know, most people discover continents, oil, diamonds, a cure. Bill Wilson and Gene Russell discovered liquor, and, you know, I was part of life at last. And just that one sentence, as I was thinking about doing this talk, because I haven't done one of these in about a year. I don't have a formal talk. I don't write it out. I'm not that kind of whatever. I just want to be with you and experience this. So I think about it, and it kind of comes out in an ADD scatterbrain thing. So deal with it. Or it's good to have a sponsor. But I was thinking about that line, discovering liquor. And the years I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous and either not exposed or wasn't willing to, or I'm not laying blame, not doing the work in the first step And in 10 years, I'm really revisiting that first step of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we were powerless over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. And 10 years ago or so, when somebody in Texas pulled me aside and helped me diagnose myself with the very simple two questions that are presented in We Agnostics, what happens when you drink? Can you control it every single time? Or this whole business about mental obsession, are you making decisions to not drink and find yourself taken drunk? That's probably an obsession of the mind. Can you hook up with that? And then the whole spiritual malady deal, you know, I hooked up with that right away. And so it was easy to get into these rooms by diagnosis. Once I understood that, I fit in. I was able to start taking direction. But these last few months, I've been really looking at the relationship I had to alcohol as it pertained to why I drank it. Does it make sense? Kind of, it's... anybody ever ask you guys why you did it? You look at the wreckage of your life, you know, you got you another DWI, another emergency room, another bail bondsman you got to pay, another court appearance. People would say this to me all the time, man. It's like, Gene, look what alcohol's doing to you. Why do you do it? What was your answer? Somebody said it. I don't know. I don't know. It's probably the only honest thing I'd ever said in years. Why would a rational, reasonable person do this to themselves? It wasn't that. The things that alcohol did to me were the opportunity cost of what alcohol did for me. Oh my God, if you felt what I felt on the inside, and when I drank, that went away. All of this other stuff that just happened when I drank just happened. I would deal with it because alcohol, my relationship with what it did for me, I could not give this up. I couldn't. I wanted to. I wanted to control it. I wanted my medicine just to get me to that comfortable spot. I didn't mean to get nailed every time I drank, but I did. Guys, I ran over myself with my own pickup truck in Texas. I don't think you can be a member of AA until you run over yourself. Alcohol did for me what nothing else could. It held me together. It gave me this illusion that I could fit in. I was all right. I felt, you know. But then the opportunity cost of that became so great. And all of the things that led into it, the legal, the health, all of that, the busted relationships, the ruining of my family. My mom and dad are still alive. They're still here. I'm staying with them this weekend. They let me in the house. It's one of those promises not in the big book. I walked by my mom's purse the other day, and she didn't even blink. And that's my book. What it did for me was irreplaceable. You had to give me something better. You had to get me comfortable in my own skin, which I could never do and which alcohol did for me. So as all of these things, as I was drinking early on in life, I don't know how y'all drank, but I love drunks. I love alcoholics. I like them sober. I like them when they're drinking. I like bars. So I went and got me a job at a bar. I worked at a place called the Derby. Some of y'all heard about the Derby? You're in the right room then. Derby's old place over in North Atlanta on Spalding, and it's in a strip center. They got a bunch of them now, but this was the first one. You could be an August day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, the sun burning down. You open the door to the Derby, and all the light in the universe sucks right into there. And it's a great old place, man. You step on that spongy old carpet, and that smell. Oh, love it. I love the smell. Smells like stale beer and urine and Pine-Sol and failure. If Glade ever puts out an air freshener, I'm about a case of it. I still like to this day, I love that smell. You can hear the pool ball. Anyway, I surrounded myself with the people that did it the way I did it so I could feel the way I needed to feel so I could survive into this world. It didn't matter if I didn't have an education or whatever. Whatever it is you're doing, I would line right up with you. I didn't care if you were a lawyer, a doctor, a carpenter, whatever you were doing, I was right there with you. You like blue? I love blue. Whatever. And I lived in a false reality for a long, long time, up until the point I got to meet one of the kindest men I ever met over in Roswell, and he was a judge, and we didn't meet on social circumstances. I was standing tall before him, probably in this suit. One more time. Judge Hilliard, he's filled our rooms up. That guy's done more service work than he'd ever knew. And he sentenced me to Alcoholics Anonymous 15 years before my sobriety date. That was 25 years ago. And he gave me a little sheet of paper. And he said, go over there to 8111 and they'll fix you over there. And that was my beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the instruction I got then is no different than what you get when you first get here now. Go to 90 and 90. Do those things on the wall, you know. Pick up cigarette butts and all that other stuff. But that's where it ended for me. I thought attending meetings would get me sober, and I kept failing. I would go to these meetings, I'd go to 90 and 90, 180 and 90. Those are great suggestions. I'm not taking exception with those, but if that's all an alcoholic of the real variety does without doing the work the 12 steps indicates you to do and the timing you say do it, you're bound to drink again. The book is clear. Book is clear. And that was my experience. So I'm not here to tell you don't go to 90 and 90. Go to a zillion meetings. I think it's a great idea. Get a sponsor that will not only encourage you, that will challenge you to do this work and get free. And that's what happened. So the years I was in and out of these meetings, I would show up drunk at them and share. I would, you know... the desperate experiment of the drink one more time. All of that nonsense. I would on and on and on, catch another case, stand in front of the judge one more time, and Judge Hilliard asked me, Gene, why do you do it? Judge, I don't know. He goes, I'm going to give you an opportunity here. You can come spend 5 years in our gated community, which is nice. Or you can leave and not come back. And my dad was with me because somebody had to pay for the attorney. And he didn't mean Roswell. He meant Georgia. I was in the prime of my life and I was getting run out of a state. And there was a chance for me to go back to Crystal Beach, Texas, which is in Galveston, Texas. And I'll tell you that to tell you this. I got shipped over there. I didn't have a driver's license, obviously. My dad gave me $500, said, good luck, son. They were exasperated. I'd burned that bridge like every other bridge, like every other bridge before that. I was scared, drunk, alone. I had this ego you couldn't fit into this ballroom, and I had this inferiority complex. I thought I just wanted to die, and I couldn't make it stop. I don't know if you've ever been to that dark place, Alcoholics, but it's a dark place. You ever want to stop and not be able to? You ever drink against your will? Woo, that's some scurry drinking right there. That's when you're drinking with tears in your eyes. That's who we are. That's the allergy that we have. Here's the problem with something like that. That's an allergy of the body. A reasonable, rational person would not do that. We don't have that feature, do we? You don't see the man or woman that's allergic to oysters going, you know, if I eat those oysters, I'm going to break out and go to the hospital. My throat's going to close up. I'm going to die. But you know what? It's Friday. I just got paid. Don't happen, right? What is that with us? Gene, you're going to do 25 years if you do it again. I'm thinking about 25 years, son. Because I have to drink. I have to drink. I'm out in Texas and it got bad, it got worse. And to the point, in an alcoholic's life that continues the practice of alcoholism, because you got to understand this. This is the way I understand my alcoholism. My alcoholism will get treated no matter what. Two ways. The easier, softer way at nice places like this and meeting houses and out in these parking lots working some steps, that's the organic, holistic, God-given way, very low intrusive compared to the other way I tend to treat it, and that's with drinking. Know this, if you're the real alcoholic, you're treating it. You're treating it one or two ways. If I stop doing this, I can assure you, if I stop going to meetings, if I stop living within the design for living, if I stop sponsoring men, if I stop being sponsored, if I stop the conscious contact with God as I understand Him, all these simple things they give us to do, I will drink again. I know that. My experience supports that statement. I am not cured. I am recovered. And that is not a place of being cocky about that word. There's a lot of controversy that goes with that.
He's cocky
because he's recovered. If you go back and you listen to the old tapes, which I fell in love with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in the history, those old speakers introduced themselves from the podium as a recovered alcoholic to give the newcomer hope. And that's all that is. That's not here to tell you my recovery is better than your recovery. That means a degenerate, low-life, low-bottom drunk can get sober and have a great life. So one thing led to another in Texas, and I couldn't do it anymore, and I just wanted to check out. Pay the ultimate price. And so I tried. I had tried before, but I really tried this time. And they ship you off to little rooms with steel doors when you do that. And I got out of that deal, AMA, and I had $6 in my pocket from the hospital. And I had to take a ferry to where I lived over in Crystal Beach on the Bolivar Peninsula. And that $6 was important because you'd think I'd get a cab to the ferry landing, but I needed a beer. That's alcoholism, and that's what I used to be like. I don't know how you drank. That's how I drank. My parents wouldn't talk to me anymore, and I'd been going to these meetings for years. They had a nice little meeting in Bolivar. I'd drink me a nice 22-ounce Budweiser before I go to that meeting, because I needed to do that. And they were very kind and patient in that meeting with me, and they loved me anyway. They loved me anyway. They let me come. I finally got a conversation with my mom over the phone. She finally answered the phone. I said, "Mom, I'll do anything. I'll do anything. I don't want to die. I can't die. I'm not good at killing myself. So we got to figure something out." She goes, "We don't have to figure anything out, but..." She goes, "If you're serious..." Now, I've been in and out of these rehab facilities. I have done all of the state-run stuff. I had been to some you pay for. I had done all of it. I have lit little candles around a bathtub. I've exercised. I prayed to something I didn't know, whatever. I just white-knuckled that. Oh, God, white-knuckle sobriety is so difficult. But my mom studied real hard to find a place, and the agreement was this: I'll go anywhere as long as they don't do Alcoholics Anonymous there, because Alcoholics Anonymous does not work. I've tried it. Tried it. I went to a lot of meetings in a row. I don't know what they're doing to be sober. In fact, I don't think they are. But I'll go anywhere as long as they don't do AA. So my mom studied hard, and she looked long, and she turned on Dr. Phil. And they were talking about people like me, and there was a little community out in the middle of Texas, and I'm not here to talk about that facility. It was any different than any other facility. It was great. But somewhere in there, she heard they didn't do AA, and she... I said, "I got a place if you're willing to go, and thank God for family. If you're blessed enough to have your family in your life, wherever they are in your life, however strained the relationship may or may not be, if you've got family, work some steps, take great lengths to repair that, because I wouldn't be here without the loving support of my mother and father, especially my mom, and I am so blessed to have those two people in my life." But they did what they had to do. It must have cost them a fortune. But they came over to Texas. My mom and my brother did. And they took me over to a place called La Hacienda, which I thought was a Mexican restaurant. And I was like, "Sick, tacos." And you go through the intake. And I'm 120 pounds because I had found various other ways to drink my alcohol. And I don't want to step on any traditions. But I was dying. I was just dying. So I get through all of that, and they give you a little piece of paper, a little syllabus like you do in school, and they send you over to the whatever class. I didn't know what was going on. I was fogged out of my mind, and they had a big room like this, you know, and they had this dry erase board up there on the stage like this, and there was a standard issue Texan with his Levi's and his T-shirt on. And he had a little snowman, whatever that meant, written on his board. And right behind him, those stupid 12 steps, those stupid traditions. I was bamboozled. I was conned. And I sat way in the back because that's how I like to go to meetings. I like to show up late, sit in the back, leave early, don't participate, make fun of the speaker, tell them why it doesn't work, and then haul butt home and cry the whole way. Because that's who I am. I'll poke fun of it because I'm scared of it. And I don't have the willingness to go do what these people have done, and then I'll take exception with it because that's been my experience all my life. I felt like Alcoholics Anonymous owed me something for attending Alcoholics Anonymous. And this old boy had a podium like this, and my life was about to change, and I didn't even know it. And I hadn't thought about this in a while. If you stay alive long enough and you keep your mind open, God will show up. That's a fact. He's going through his deal and he's welcoming the new people. Which, by the way, is a mortifying experience. If you're new, you guys with the weak deal, and you come up on a... God bless you for doing that. Out of it. Woo! God bless you for doing that. That's brave, brave, brave. Not me, man. Later. You want me to go up there in front of all these people? Because my ego is like, I'm so... Like, when we see a newcomer, we act like it's the second coming. We're like, whoa, look at him. And we're like, stop, you know. All I want is like, leave me alone. I made it here. That's all, you know. Don't hug me. And you're going to get 350 hugs before you leave. But if you're like me, you get 350 hugs, you just want to get a white chip every night then too. You're like, you know, anyway. Depends on the meeting you're at. So this man's going through this and he's welcoming newcomers, right? And I didn't understand what was going on. He's going down the roll. And he's, you know, Jim Bob, Susie Q, whatever. And he's like... Gene Russell, you here? And I, yeah, good. And he goes, buddy, we got a seat right up front here, man. We're going to talk about some first step business today. We're going to break it down for you. It's going to be great. And all these guys are sitting there, all sitting there with notes, and they're getting ready to get down with this, you know. And I'm like, all these people really wanting to get well today. And he's like, come on up here, man. I'm like, no, I'm good. Oh, well, I mean, he said, I'm good. I wouldn't be in rehab if I was good, but... And he stopped dead cold. Dead cold. And he looked at me. And he had an eye patch. He's like, excuse me? I said, I'm good. He goes, buddy, we want you to get up right up front here so you can, you know, hang out and get all this. Man, we're going to love on you. It's gonna be we're going to have a good time. Come on, man. And I said, no, thank you. And he goes, what's your problem? And it got really awkward quiet. Like court quiet. And I don't know why I said this. And I'm glad I did, and I wished I hadn't in the same moment. I said, listen, man, it doesn't work. That's what they said, too. I heard that, and I was like, Oh. And he goes, what doesn't work? I said, that 12-step business, I've tried it. And he goes, oh, you have? Let me ask you a few questions. I said, shoot. He said, have you admitted you were powerless over alcohol and your life had become unmanageable? Have you come to believe that a power greater than yourself could restore you to sanity? Have you turned your will and your life over to the care of God as you understand Him? Have you written a searching and fearless moral inventory of yourself, sharing that with another alcoholic and God, outlining the greater defects of your character? Have you become willing to let these defects of character go? Have you said that prayer in the 7-step, letting that stuff go? Have you become willing to make amends and straighten out the damage you've done in your past? Better yet, have you gone out and made all of your amends, not just the ones you're happy to do with your mom and dad? Have you made all of your amends throughout the course of your life? Have you cleaned up the past directly as you make mistakes? Have you sought through prayer and meditation, not prayer and medication, a conscious contact with a better relationship with God? And better yet, have you taken this information that God gave us years ago to make you obsession-free from alcohol? Have you taken this message and given it to a newcomer and shared it with the guy that's walking in the door? Have you done anything but come into my meetings and ask for a job and a girlfriend? Have you done one single solitary thing that's required to be here? How about that? Have you done that? Whoa. I answered to the best of my ability. What is that? Why do alcoholics always use that as an answer? I did it to the best of my ability. That's a stupid thing to say. He said, get out. I hear it all the time when I tell this story. I hear it all the time. People will come up to me, that was not the way to talk to a newcomer. Hell yeah, it was that day. It was, he said, get out. There are no locks on our doors. There are no lectures to endure. There are no axes to grind. This is a free and open deal. If you want to become obsession free, get comfortable in your own skin, get your life together, start kicking ass and taking names, and start having a real reason to be on this earth and watch your life explode, I got something for you. If not, it's a long walk back to Crystal Beach, pal. Enjoy. But you've been coming to these meetings for years taking. You ain't put nothing back. That's going to change whether you're going to stay here or not. A price has to be paid. So as I walked up to the front of the room, what that man said to me directly was important because it had depth and weight, and he loved me enough to tell me the truth, and he did not care whether or not he hurt my feelings. He could go to bed that night knowing he had told the newcomer how the cow ate the cabbage. God bless him for doing it. We don't do it enough, in my opinion. If you upset him, he's going to leave. Guess what? He's going to leave anyway. He's going to pick another excuse to go out and do it again. She left me. That's me, you know. He told me the truth, and what he did more importantly after that, once he got my attention, is he told me how great and cool my life was going to be. He pulled me in there with a vision for you. Man, he told me what sober life looked like. Not just getting comfortable without wanting, not drinking anymore, not wanting to drink anymore. Man, he started talking about things I could understand. We went to a little old meeting out there, and he put all this on a little druggy buggy. We all out there shaking and quaking. And he goes, look, don't share, just listen. And, because, you know, when you're new, you want to talk about your day. And we're going to talk about your day and rehab, right? We're going to talk about God and the steps. And man, it was the best. You ever go to those meetings that were so powerful that you just go home and you feel like you're not even sitting in your vehicle? You just got them on top! And this old boy pulled out a driver's license. And he's like, man, I got a driver's license. Got my picture and an address I can be found. I'm like, yeah! Look at that! Old girl pulled out one of those debit cards. You know, that you could get money out and you put in a machine. But that, you only got one of those about 20 years. That's a big deal. That's hope. And these people went around the room and they were telling me how they were working steps and then they were overcoming these problems that seemed insurmountable to someone like me at that time, man. It carried a lot of weight with me. It was like, man, I can do that too. No, the girl was going to school. I couldn't believe it. I was blown away by that. And I had never heard a message so powerful of Alcoholics Anonymous as I did during that period of my life. I was in. I come back and man, the I don't know how much, I don't know when I got up here. Y'all just tell me when I'm done. The thing that really got me though, and this would be considered a little controversial part, he really emphasized with the newcomer to do the work the way the book says it in the timing he said do it. He goes, buddy, you don't have to wait around 20 years to get to step 9. The book says at once, next, immediately, let's do these steps. Let's get you on some solid ground, obsession free, and then we can start working on the other components of your life with the step work. Let's teach you the rules first, bro. And I was like, man, I'm down for that. He goes, man, you don't get 2 weeks to do a 4-step. I'll see you tomorrow. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, buddy, you're talking about your favorite subject, you. How long is it going to take? You know, it's just, he goes, but if I do it wrong, there's only one way to do it wrong. Don't do it. That's the wrong way. We'll figure the rest out. Start getting pen to paper. There's something spiritual in it. Just start looking at being selfish, self-centered, inconsiderate, dishonest, and frightened. You know, how does that permeate through everywhere in your life? Where are you going to start taking the role in these? You're not a victim. Victims don't get sober. Oh, no, you're a victim. No, bro, you did this to you. You're the common denominator, Gene. You know, revelation for an alcoholic. I learned so much in such a short time. It was fascinating. It was fun. It got me to participate. It broke down the walls I've always had from you. I drink at those walls. I'll build them, become a victim, and stay drunk. It never occurred to me that drinking was anti-gene medicine. Wow. Then we go to these meetings and tell me how to share in a meeting. You better go in there no matter what problem you're going through. You better have something of how you're solving that problem. You get a sponsor in there and you work on your problems outside of that meeting. You go in there and you bring the hope. We have a responsibility in these rooms to pull the newcomer with a vision. That is now your charge. You have a purpose for being here. I don't have no reason to be on this planet anymore. God doesn't love me. We have been given the power to help others. Lack of power being our dilemma. What do I need? What do I need? Power. If I don't have power, I need power. How do I get power? Do the work, obtain a relationship with a God of your understanding, and you will have the power to help others, pay the light bill, go to school, get in a relationship, hopefully get out of that thing as fast as I can. Relationships. Guys, though, in the last 10 years, I would love to tell you it's been all this great stuff happening to Gene Russell. But you know, what I know that you guys have been here for the years you've been here have experienced sober bottoms. You ever bottom out in sobriety, man? That's brutal. It's happened to me a few times. Because here's what happens. The steps will make you obsession-free. Life happens. You're going to have God. You know, I don't want to drink, but I hurt so bad. I don't know what to do. The wheels have come off in my life. And I'm 2 years into this thing, and I'm over at the Biscayne Room. And I don't share this story all the time. I'm going to share it tonight because we have a very special friend with us. And Hurricane Ike had blown my house away in Crystal Beach, Texas. I had got my 2 years together, and I was going to go down there, and me and my buddy were going to open up a sober living or something. Well, I don't know. You know, we're going to do something. What is that? We're going to help everybody. Storm blew in and blew everything I owned away. I was a commercial fisherman. And insurance company didn't pay us any money. So it was a terrible thing for my family and I. collected my 2-year chip, and I'd like to go over that Monday night men's meeting over at Biscayne, 12-Step Titans. Those guys started that deal over there, and I was there at the beginning of all that. And they have a meeting before that meeting at 8 o'clock. If you're a guy and it's Monday and you want to hear some solution, those boys over there got a handle on it. And I was at the 6 o'clock meeting, and I was upset, and I wasn't going to go on with the sobriety business because I was mad at you for something happening to me, because that's the only way I know how to really react anyway. And I was going to make a grandstand, final, I'm out, you know. And I don't appreciate you laughing at my, for the record. Thank God for you old-timers that go to these meetings to corral crazy, sober alcoholics like me. We were at the part, I think we had Burning Desire, and Rusty was leading the meeting. I never liked Rusty. And they had been sober a long time. I made my announcement that I was going to leave and go drink because I had lost my home in a hurricane, and it was all of your fault. Y'all promised me everything was going to be great. I didn't have any more use for you all. And you could take your 2-year chip too. Rusty was the discussion leader, or you were the chairperson or something. And he had a big book. See, he carried a big book to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. There's an idea. To say he does it to every meeting, but he had, you know. Oh, why people get a lot of trouble for carrying books to meetings for some reason. I've never understood that. And he opened it up and he said, here's the how and why of it. We had to quit playing God because it doesn't work. And he diffused my anger and frustration and my grief all in one moment. And then he said something very profound. He said, Gene, alcoholics don't go to AA meetings and announce they're going to go to drink. Which I didn't dawn on me. And he said, we're going to continue our meeting, but if you'd like, I'd like to talk to you in the parking lot of the Biscayne area, you know, after the meeting. And I don't want you to go anywhere, but if you got to go, you got to go. But I'll be outside after the meeting. See, he had a responsibility to the meeting that was being led. He didn't let me take it over with my problems. He kept it on track, and he had a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that he cited the truth from, and he shut me down. And he saved my life. He saved my life. And we went outside and we talked. And he allowed me to express my frustration and my fear and my hurt. And we have been in parking lots for years talking on the phone. Thank God for guys like that to do those kinds of things. And you know, when something terrible happens to you like that, like it happens to all of us, there's death and things like that. There was a void in my life with my education. I wanted to go back to school. Danny, my sponsor, is like, listen, it's time for you to go back to college, you know. And we didn't get any money from that storm, so I'm living in my parents' house. I'm 36 years old, winter. And I wanted to go up to University of Georgia and all that. And Danny's like, listen there, what do you think about going to UCLA? And I was like, man, UCLA? I like the thought of UCLA. So, you know, God, what year was it? I graduated from UCLA with a degree, not California, the university closest to Lawrenceville. I graduated. What, did y'all think it was out there? No. My sponsor helped me find what I was good at, and Gwinnett Tech, which is a great little old school, and I was a carpenter by trade, and I went and if you don't have any money like me, and you do everything Alcoholics Anonymous teaches you to do, get there early, stay late, do all the work, and ask a lot of questions. Anybody can get a stupid degree. That's not a hard thing to do. The hard thing to do is to do what AA taught me to do and apply it in real life in real time. And that's what I did. And I was able to get a degree in construction management, and it's serving me well today in my new business, which is this. I had a resentment. You ever get a resentment in sobriety? You ever want to kill somebody in sobriety? I do. I really do. I told you we didn't get any money from that loss in the hurricane from the insurance people, right? So me and my associates had made a plan to kill the insurance adjuster and bury him. And sponsorship's important. And and I explained my plan to Danny, and Danny, pretty good plan. Very good. I'd kill him too, you know. So I thought we were all in agreement. Let's go back. And he goes, "Well, why don't you try this?" And I was like, "Ah, man." He goes, "Why don't you take that little degree of yours? Why don't you go sit for the exam in Georgia and become an insurance adjuster? And you go help people in their times of loss. And you use your experience to benefit others. And you put bad adjusters out of business by being a good adjuster yourself." I was like, "I like the killing thing better." But he's a good sponsor, and Hurricane Sandy blew in through the Northeast, and insurance adjuster Gene Russell, a standing good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, was deployed up there to work in that storm, and I was able to use that experience of losing my home to help those people out in the Northeast, and it was the most rewarding time of my life. And it's not... And it has nothing to do with anything I did. If you're new and you take this instruction, you're going to go on a ride that you can't even imagine today. You have no earthly idea where this thing is going to take you. It's taking me to places now I can't even get my mind around. If you guys look on my Facebook lately, you'd be like, "What?" We'll get to that later. But in of that, learning to be an adjuster, I learned how all that business worked, and I didn't like it. It's not a pretty business, in my opinion. So I switched. I flipped the script. I studied under those people for 6 years, and now I work for the public against the insurance companies. And when I moved out of the United States to Atlantic Beach, Florida, that's what I'm doing now. I'm serving the public, and I didn't realize I'm getting such a pay cut. But now I get to go and I get to fight legally on your behalf, and that is what I mean when I say God is real. I've been homeless. I've been incarcerated. I've been all of those things. You guys took me up, cleaned me up, taught me how to do the work, and I'm here today. And along these lines, you taught me how to sponsor men. And the most rewarding thing you'll ever do, I believe, in this thing is to pass this message along to someone else. And it reminds me of a little story, and I'll let us get out of here because I think I've been talking for about 15, 20 minutes in a row. I'm a big fan of music and stuff like that, and I'm a big fan of people that have made a huge impact on history, and I like sports, and I like Muhammad Ali a lot, and I was watching this documentary on that man, and he's one of those people who didn't care what anybody thought. He just kind of did it his way, and of course you guys probably know the story of him, and you know, he made his comeback here in Atlanta, and they took his license away from him to fight because he didn't agree with that war in Vietnam. And that's it, because his belief in his God was strong enough. He said, "You can do whatever you want to me. I am not doing that. I don't have any quarrel with those people." And so he had lost his prime years in doing that. And so he was coming back, and he was going to fight Big George Foreman over in Africa. And there's a whole thing on that. And George wasn't the man selling grills and hamburgers back then. George is from Houston, Texas, and George would have bitten Mike Tyson's head off and thrown him out in the yard. George was a scary, scary man. People were scared for Ali's life, and his very life, in fighting this guy. And he was over in Pennsylvania training. And Ali, of course, got tons and tons of mail. And he would actually read his mail while he was training. And this is the amazing thing about people like that and him like that changed the universe. And he gets one and he reads it, and there's a very sick kid with cancer who's 90 some odd miles away from his training camp. And he's fighting, he's getting ready, an older fighter getting ready to fight the fight of his life, and he's touched by this letter from this kid. and he wants to go and visit the kid. He's like, you gotta take me to see this boy. He's gonna die of cancer, and I can't stand that. So we're gonna go. So Angelo Dundee and all these guys loaded Ollie up, and they took him out to this kid's house. And unexpected, they took the address and they went out there, and they show up. You imagine living out somewhere like in Kentucky or somewhere, and hey, this is the champ. You know, it's you know. The father answered the door, and he went and he visited with this family and this child, and he told this child, he said, I'm going to go to Africa and I want to be George Foreman and I'm going to be the champion of the world, and you're going to beat cancer because God is real and we're going to win this together. And so he left and he went back to training camp, and he trained 6 more hard weeks for this fight. This was a very dedicated man, and he receives another letter. And the kid's not doing so well. It's upset Ali, and he goes, I want to go back and visit with that boy. So they load him up, and they took him back out there. He knocked on the door again. The father at this time has got to be like, what is it? The father explains to him, he's not doing well. We don't think he's going to make it. It's really bad now, but this visit is great. He walks in, and Ali says to this boy, I thought I told you I was going to go to Africa and I'm going to beat George Foreman and that you were going to beat cancer because God is real. And the kid looks at Ali and says, champ, I'm going to die of cancer. There's nothing we can do about it. And I'm going to go to heaven. And when I get there, I'm going to tell them I met you. The champ didn't know what to do with that. This boy was going to cross over, brave as it could be. And when he got to heaven, he was going to tell God that he met Ali in hopes of getting a better place in heaven. How amazing is that? In my mind, my ego wants to be like Ali. But when my day comes, and I hope it's not soon, because it's good right now. My life is good right now. If I get the opportunity, I'm going to tell God that I met you guys. Because what you guys have done has given me a life I could never dream of. What you guys have done for me is provide me the instruction I need if I decide to follow it to a path and a place I couldn't even imagine being down this road. The farther I go, the more I want to do this. It is just, I mean, it's been good the whole time. Now it's unbelievable. I wake up every day going, I can't wait! I love getting new guys in here, man, because it was just like me, man. So doom and gloom, and it's all bad, and you guys are nerds, and you're not funny. Look, my sticker stuck to my sleeve. Alcoholics Anonymous will give you more than you ever give it. All you got to do is show up early, stay late, ask a lot of questions, and please do all the work. Know this, that God is real. Happy birthday, Alcoholics Anonymous in Atlanta. Thank you for having me.